All right, welcome everyone to this week's W3C CCG meeting. Today we're very excited to have Zoe, Stephen from OpenAI, and also Manu's here too, to actually talk about lead a discussion around personhood credentials, a privacy preserving credential to demonstrate who's real online amid artificial intelligence. But before we start, I know everyone is so anxious to actually jump into that topic, but before we start, just want to quickly go over some administrative stuff. First of all, just want to have a quick reminder around the code of ethics and professional conduct. Just want to make sure that we hold constructive and helpful conversations here at W3C CCG. We have been doing that for years. I never heard of any like bad comments or anything like that, but let's just continue to do that. Second, just a quick note on the intellectual property. Anyone can participate in these calls. However, all substantive contributions to any CCG for items must be a member of the CCG with full IPR agreement signed. So if you have any questions in regards to getting a W3C account or the community contributor license agreement, feel free to reach out to any of the co-chairs. Quick notes about this call. These calls are being automatically transcribed and recorded. So we will publish the transcription, the audio and video recording in the next 24 to 48 hours. We use GT Chat to queue the speakers. So you can type in Q plus to add yourself to the queue or Q minus to remove. I will be moderating the queue. All right. Just want to take a quick moment for the introductions and reintroductions. So if you're new to the community or you haven't been active and want to re-engage, please feel free to just unmute and actually just introduce yourself. You don't have to type in Q plus or anything. I see mostly familiar faces and I'm not going to call on people today. So let's jump to the next segment. Want to take a quick moment for the announcements and reminders. So are there any announcements or reminders about upcoming events or anything? Manu, please.
One quick one for this week. So, and it's relevant to, the topic that we're going to talk about, today, at the Internet Engineering Task Force in the Crypto Forum Research Group. That's the group that standardizes cryptography for the Internet and the web. There's a new call for adoption that just went out. I'm going to put the link in the chat channel here. It is for the adoption of what's called blind BBS and BBS pseudonyms. This particular technology is super important when you want a privacy preserving way of asserting, you know, an attribute about yourself. So we have gotten like the core BBS, the base BBS stuff through the ITF and CFRG. It's got, you know, good like cryptographic review. These are optional things that you can layer on top to achieve things like proof of personhood or proving age per verifier pseudonyms, per issuer pseudonyms, holder pseudonyms, things of that nature. So we see it as like it's vital technology for the BBS work. So how can you help? Send an email to the mailing list. If you think that, like, this is useful technology, and by the way, we totally need this technology for verifiable credentials, if you think this is useful technology, please send an email to the mailing list saying that you feel that the technology is important and you support its adoption into the group. Again, as a reminder to people that are not familiar with IETF, everyone is there as an individual. So as an individual, you have a voice. As an individual, you can say, I support the adoption of this technology. It's really important that this adoption happens, because if it doesn't happen, then we don't have any way of doing, pseudonym stuff in BBS, which would be like really bad. That's it. And of course, Greg is here today. Greg, who's been working on this technology, Greg Bernstein, who's also done presentations to this group about pseudonyms and BBS, is here if there are any questions there.
Thank you, Harrison.
Well, thanks, Manu. Thanks, Greg. Steven, I think you're on the queue.
Hi, Manu, thank you for the update on that. Do you know when they expect to have a decision on whether it will be incorporated?
Usually it takes, they keep it open for like anywhere from a week to a month. Greg, do you know how long the review period is for this particular one?
This isn't even a review. This is just to get these documents as working group documents so we can really formalize work. So they, to get, I would say, yeah, a week to a month, and then we'll probably ask the work group chairs. Okay. So that's kind of the time frame. CFRG is a little looser in general than the rest of the IETF.
Great. Any other questions? Bonnie, please.
Yeah, sorry. I also meant to say that, like, this is work that happened at DIF, Decentralized Identity Foundation, which is fantastic that the work happened there, and you know, it's being promoted to IETF for standardization. There are a number of people in, you know, this community, DIF, you know, CCG, W3C, that have worked on it. So thanks a ton for our friends over at DIF as well.
Yep. Big thanks. Any other announcements or reminders? By the way, a quick announcement. So Kimberly's term, our co-chair of W3C CCG, will end this year. So we'll be soliciting a new, basically nomination for a new W3C CCG co-chair. So we'll send out an email in the next few weeks in regards to the process. But if you have anyone that you would like to recommend, feel free to just reach out to me or Will. And then a quick preview on what's coming. So next week we'll have the open session for the quarter four 2024 review and also work item updates. So I will be sending out an email to the different task forces in regards to see if they have any updates. If no updates, feel free to just say, hey, no updates. So we'll quickly go through them and then also just open up the floor for any discussions or topics or maybe suggestions on how we can further improve and grow next week. And then a week after that, we got Heather to actually give us an update on the Federated Identity Working Group. All right, so last calls for introductions, announcements, reminders, or if you have any updates in regards to work items, feel free to just type in Q plus or just unmute. All right, let's jump to the main agenda. So again, we're very excited to have Zoe and Steven from OpenAI here to actually talk about present and the lead of discussion around personhood credentials, a privacy preserving credential to demonstrate who's real online amid artificial intelligence. So I have sent out the link to their research paper in the email agenda. Feel free to you know, click on that if you have further questions. But without further ado, Zoe, the floor is yours.
Great. Thank you so much. Thanks for having me. It's great to be able to present this work to this group. Can everyone see this screen okay? I'm
yep,
sure there's perfect. A better way to do it, but let's just go with this for now. So I'm super excited to talk to this group. The idea of personhood credentials, I would imagine, is somewhat familiar to many here. I think what's exciting for me about talking to all of you is that we're going to bring a perspective to this question about that basically suggests that digital credentials, personhood credentials being one of them, are incredibly important as a solution to some of the problems that we can see coming from the widespread adoption and deployment of artificial intelligence in various ways. So what I'll focus on today is talking about, you know, the content of the paper and giving you an overview, but I really want to accelerate through to the discussion to hear ideas from you all about where to go with these ideas after I've convinced you that these sorts of privacy preserving credentials are really one of the most important sorts of solutions and protections we have for some of the coming problems. Also feel free to, I don't know what the group norms are, but I don't mind being interrupted if you have questions as we go along, and I will adjust my timing to make sure that I leave at least 15 minutes for questions and discussions at the end. So for some background, I'm currently a researcher at OpenAI, and this paper was a massive effort from a wide range of people led by my colleague, Stephen Adler, who's here on the call, who you just heard, and as well as Shrey Jain, who might be on the call, and a wide range of other researchers and practitioners from industry, academia, and the civil sector. Manu, of course, was a crucial author on this paper, as was Kim Duffy, who I think is on the call. So I'll just briefly talk. As I said, I want to focus in this call on what we see as the problem that personhood credentials can respond to. And these are problems that we're seeing in the AI space. Then I'll give an overview of our approach, what we sort of outlined as a system that solves the problem we've identified. I will say up front that this is not a particularly technical solution. We don't offer a very specific concrete implementation. That's not kind of the point of the paper. The point of the paper was to argue for the importance of this idea and to get people talking about it in a serious way. And then, as I said, we'll focus on next steps. So this paper starts from a kind of basic observation, but one that is increasingly alarming in AI policy circles, which is that it's getting harder to tell if there's a person behind various kinds of activity on the internet. And this is because this is kind of for two reasons. There are two trends in AI that are pushing in this direction. The first is one that we roughly talk about as indistinguishability. It's becoming much easier for to create content that is indistinguishable from human content. And this is not just like, you know, highly persuasive text that sounds like it was written thoughtfully by some person, and but also avatars, increasingly deep fakes and so forth. And increasingly, actions can be taken around the internet by AI agents in a way that makes them, even their actions, indistinguishable from the sorts of actions that a human would take. And to think about this, you know, think concretely about some of the tools that have come out recently. Like in the last month, Anthropic released a computer using agent, for example, which clicks around the web, much like a human does. And at the same time, as many people know, these AI tools are increasingly widely available. Their costs are decreasing, and there are tons of accessible models, especially open weights models, are easily accessible to anyone with an ability to access the internet and figure out how to run them. And one of the observations that we really try to begin with is that personhood credentials end up looking like a solution that is robust to highly capable AI, as in it provides a way of identifying who's when some activity is coming from a person in a way that's robust to highly capable AI, and also in a way that is privacy preserving and inclusive. So those are kind of like the three desiderata that we think about in this paper, that we want a solution that allows us to sort of authenticate, like anonymously authenticate activity on the internet, but in a way that is privacy preserving and also inclusive. So some of the other strategies that you might think about if you're trying to think about how to counter AI powered deception is, you know, you might think first of CAPTCHAs and browser challenges of various kinds, or anomaly detection systems. And what we want to argue here is that those, the existing approaches are not going to be robust to the kinds of tools that are coming out these days. Other strategies that you might consider could be economic barriers, for example. You know, this is what, for example, Twitter does right now. In order to get an authentication, a blue check mark, you simply have to pay in some way. Those approaches may work, but they're not particularly inclusive. In AI policy circles, people talk a lot about synthetic content tools like watermarking and content provenance. Our argument is going to be that personhood credentials can really complement these sorts of approaches. And then, you know, another possibility is that one way of telling who's a person online is to require a ton of verification through appearance-based and documents-based verification processes, like asking for a picture of a driver's license, or, you know, now sometimes if you're doing some remote, for example, if you're starting a job and you have to do it remotely, you'll do some kind of live video call to check that you are the person you say you are. And our argument is going to be that not only are these not particularly privacy preserving, like there may be some solutions where it's way overboard to ask people to provide their identification or hop on a video call and say, show exactly who they are. But also these solutions are also not robust to highly capable AI. It's getting increasingly easy to spoof a driver's license in a really convincing way. It's getting increasingly easy to use a video deepfake avatar of some kind and get on a Zoom call using a likeness that is not your own. So what we argue in the paper is that we need some kind of new solutions. And I've been so far slightly vague about what exactly we're trying to, what kinds of AI powered deception we're really trying to prevent. And to sort of fix ideas for all of you, I'll talk about just three kind of broad areas. One area you can think of as like reducing the impact of sock puppeting. So people pretending to be someone they're not online, and often malicious actors, whether they're trying to do fraud or some kind of political manipulation, will make many, many profiles that are supposedly representing a particular, you know, particular real people, but in fact, these are sock puppets. We also think about mitigating various kinds of bot attacks. So if in a world where it's very cheap to send agents out, in AI agents out into the web and make tons of accounts, we worry a lot about the various kinds of attacks that this could enable on important digital services. There's also a kind of more futuristic, though not that futuristic, use case that we start thinking about in the paper, and that is part of a broader, open, wide open question about how these agents are going, how these AI agents are going to work across the web, and how we're going to make sure that they are acting on behalf of real people. And that is, we think that personhood credentials could be a really valuable way of maintaining, you know, the anonymity of the internet that we hold dear in this world where AI agents are running around and doing things on people, on humans' behalf. If there were no way of authenticating AI agents at all, then we imagine we would see lots of scaled deception, and, you know, to a degree that could really overwhelm the internet. But with personhood credentials, there could be some really simple ways to at least verify that when an agent is acting, they're acting on behalf of some person. And you don't have to know which, but some person. So this new paradigm of agentic AI is really motivating for a lot of the paper, and happy to go into more on that when we get into the discussion later on. As I said, one of the big worries, and again, one of the things motivating a lot of us who worked on this paper, is that we worry about a future where the AI, the widespread use of AI makes digital services so hard to use. They become so overwhelmed that people, that service providers end up resorting to highly non-private methods of authentication. And, you know, some groups around the world are already trying to tie internet usage to personal identity in various ways. And that's kind of like a motivating bad case, I'll say, that partially we think personhood credentials can help us to avoid. And as I said, I'm not sure how many of you have been paying close attention in the AI policy space, but one of the major policy tools in discussion right now are various kinds of content provenance. And maybe you guys are familiar with the content, the C2PA group, who are trying to come up with standards for making sure that there's a kind of standard way of providing a manifest, you know, a metadata manifest that says where various kinds of media came from. And what we want to suggest in this paper is that personhood credentials kind of are like very complementary. They take a different approach. Rather than trying to figure out whether some piece of AI media was produced, or whether some piece of media was produced by an AI or a person, we say, well, forget about the media itself. Let's think about the account, or let's think about, you know, the user. Is that user a real person? So I'll go now through our approach to the problem, which, as I said at the beginning, is kind of like a big picture outline of the types of the properties that we think a personhood credential system should have. We landed on two fundamental requirements of personhood credential systems. I should also note that many of you may be familiar with the term proof of personhood, which is in many ways essentially what we're describing. We chose to use a different term in this paper because proof of personhood ideas are varied and have taken on many different meanings in blockchain communities. And so we wanted to be able to sort of create our own definition of like exactly what we mean when we talk about a personhood credential. And so, you know, this does describe some existing systems, largely systems that describe themselves as proof of personhood.
Sorry to interject. Do you mind clarifying what's the difference between personhood credential, proof of personhood, and proof of humanity? No.
Basically, there's since in this paper, we wanted to outline a very specific set of requirements and definitions, proof of personhood and proof of humanity don't actually have particularly specific definitions. They tend to refer to a wide variety of protocols in, you know, vaguely associated with the blockchain space. And so to distinguish ourselves from them, or just kind of make something a bit more specific, we use this term personhood credentials. So it's really just that we wanted to be able to make a concrete definition regardless of what is already out there.
Got it. Thank you.
So the core idea here is that the first foundational requirement of a personhood credential system is that there has to be some method of limiting the number of credentials per user. And specifically, we say that there needs to be one credential per person per issuer. And in addition, there need to be some methods for mitigating theft or transfer of these credentials, like regular reauthentication or systems for recovery and so forth. The second foundational requirement is unlinkable pseudonymity. This is the kind of privacy that we think this sort of system should aim for. This is one in which the user interacts with services through some kind of service-specific pseudonym, and all of their activity is both untraceable by the issuer and also unlinkable across service providers, even when the service providers collude with each other and with the issuer. So these are the requirements that we think are most important for a personhood credential system. Obviously, they're still vague and need to be filled in with more specificity. But there are protocols that satisfy these requirements in some way. Obviously, you know, how well do they mitigate theft or transfer is always going to be a question. You're not going to be able to perfectly achieve all of these things. And that's another reason why we wanted to sort of distinguish ourselves a little bit from proof of personhood work, is that often they have their own ideas about what exactly, what exactly the foundational requirements are. And often, they're aiming for a kind of extreme uniqueness, where, you know, the place and the trade-off that where they really put their weight is making sure that no person has two credentials. And they also sort of often have kind of global ambitions and want to, and often sort of operate under the assumption that there would be only one issuer of personhood credentials. But we can talk more about all of that in the discussion. For now, what I'll highlight is that personhood credentials need to lean into what AIs cannot and will not soon be able to do. And one thing that they definitely can't do right now, and probably not for a while, is they can't pass as a person in the real world. So we like to think about the personhood credential is requiring some kind of offline component. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean that a person has to show up, you know, live, like as if they're showing up to the DMV to do some kind of in-person check. It could be that they have some physical document, like that's offline. They have some physical document that, you know, itself required, you know, something like being born, for example, if it's a birth certificate, or perhaps it's a driver's license, which required at some point taking a driving test. So I guess what I'm saying here is there needs to be some kind of offline component in the PHC issuance process, but it doesn't have to necessarily be that the issuer is going to confront the user in person themselves. So I'll describe now the sort of enrollment and usage process that we have in mind here. And again, this is something that we can talk about more in the discussion to talk through specific ways that this could be implemented. But the basic idea here is that the user, we like to imagine a world with many possible or multiple possible issuers, not too many, but a few, where the user is going to request their credential and provide a particular kind of evidence that the issuer asks for. That issuer is going to do some kind of validity check where they're checking, A, is the person in question actually a person? And they're also doing some uniqueness check, because remember, there's this requirement of a credential limit, one credential per person, per issuer. And then if both of those checks pass, they hand over this personhood credential to the user. We think of the user kind of holding their personhood credential in a digital wallet, and then they can use their personhood credential around the web with various different applications, various different service providers. And all the while, it's very important, they're not going to be revealing any details about their credentials. So service providers will always be using some kind of zero-knowledge proof, possibly with a nullifier if it's important for the service provider to not allow duplicate accounts. So, you know, it might be that if we're thinking about the service provider as some social media platform like Twitter, it might be the case that they want to try to enforce a rule where each person has only one account. And so in that case, they could make some application-specific pseudonym to ensure that they're not giving one user more than one account. Now, keep in mind, there are multiple issuers. So if we think through this, you know, let's imagine there are two different issuers. One might be, you know, scanning some part of your body, like a palm or an iris, and issuing a personhood credential on the basis of some kind of biometric scan. I might also go to an issuer that's perhaps a government issuer who, you know, scans a driver's license and without storing any details or tying any details about my identity to my credential, hands me a credential on the basis of this physical document. So then I could be in a position where I have two credentials, one that comes from the biometric issuer and one that comes from some kind of government issuer. And so clearly in this system, I would be able to get two social media accounts, even two authenticated social media accounts, because I have two different credentials. And basically what we're going to, the position that we take in the paper, and, you know, very happy to discuss this, because I think we all had really valuable discussions about this in the course of writing the paper. To us, that seems fine. It seems like the most important thing is being able to in some way limit activity rather than to enforce a strong notion of uniqueness. So as I said, one possible way of like achieving this offline component is to have to use some kind of zero knowledge proof of just holding a government ID without revealing which ID. So the issuer could, and there are some early protocols like, Anon Aadhaar, for example, that are starting to do this on the basis of national identification. So as I said, you know, when I was highlighting the social media example, in the paper, we sort of identified this kind of fundamental trade-off between, sorry, something happened on my screen. We identify these sorts of fundamental trade-offs between systems that have one credential versus systems that have unlimited credentials and systems that have bounded credentials. So as I said, we favor this approach where there are multiple issuers. So it is possible, you know, you're not going to fully prevent a kind of civil attack, but you will really limit the scope of those attacks because there will be a small finite number of potential trusted issuers. And so this trade-off that we describe here is that, you know, of course, if you can, the very best way to counter scalable AI-based deception would be to do something like, you know, fully where there's some like huge database that has everyone's anonymous personhood credentials in it. We think that this is a bad type of solution from the perspective of privacy and civil liberties. I mean, I definitely don't have to say that, you know, I probably don't have to convince this group that that's, for many reasons, a system that would lead to, potentially very bad outcomes. But at the same time, what we're suggesting here is that if you have no method of limiting the activity online, then you really lose out on your ability to counter scalable deception to the degree which you may actually we may actually see so much overwhelming activity on the internet that people resort to certain kinds of aggressive privacy invasive approaches. So that's why we see a bounded credential ecosystem as one that balances this trade-off between protecting privacy and civil liberties while also countering scalable deception. And on that note, as I'm talking about these trade-offs, of course, any PHC system is going to be a socio-technical system that has to be carefully designed and many implementation challenges have to be considered, such as how these credentials might end up impacting access to digital services, how they impact people's feelings of safety and confidence in free expression. Of course, there are questions about the power dynamics of digital services and the degree to which different PHC systems are vulnerable to mistakes and intentional subversion by different actors. And, you know, these are all the big questions. We believe that there are, you know, if we all put our heads together and start thinking about this really, really carefully and thoughtfully, we believe that there are ways to implement PHC systems that would maintain equitable access and free expression and checks on power and be robust to attack and error. So with that, in the paper, we outline a wide range of next steps for governments and technologists and standards bodies, and, you know, public consultation will be a very important part of socializing this idea. It can't be a solution that comes from the top down. People need to understand the cryptography. They need to understand why it's valuable. And so we talk about ways in which we can adapt existing digital systems and also prioritize personhood credentials through policy and technology. And in particular, this is where I'll stop so that we have plenty of time for discussion. But I know that this group has particular skills and perspectives to offer, and we'd be super excited to hear what your reactions are. I mean, I think one very clear next step is to move towards some more concrete technical specifications. And, you know, potentially this group might be interested in spinning off another kind of working group on personhood credentials in particular, or maybe it fits into an existing initiative to try to make these ideas more concrete and to bring them to a wider audience. So I'll stop there. And yeah, let's do discussion. I mean, we can format it as Q&A. My my co-author Stevens here too, and Kim and Manu. I want all of us to, you know, be part of the discussion.
Manu, please.
Yep. Thank you, Zoe. That was like, that was awesome. Thank you for, you know, taking the time and presenting it to the group. And I know, as you said, this group is like super interested in the work and really wants to see it, be realized, right? So, I guess the question is like, you know, where do we go from here and what do we do? I also, before going to that though, I also want to kind of point out to the rest of the group that, Stephen and Zoe and Sheree have been like absolutely amazing and awesome through this entire like exercise. Like this has been going on for, you know, 2+ years, a year plus, and they are some of the best bridge builders that I've seen operate across like all these different groups to bring people together to kind of work on this problem. So, you know, if you're interested in working on this stuff, I can't more highly recommend, you know, working with, Stephen and Zoe, you know, on this stuff. That said, there, you know, we have seen signals. This is mostly for like, you know, Zoe and Stephen. We've seen signals where like people are already starting to work on this stuff. Like they read the paper and they're kind of like, charging forward. So like just last week, I think, Kim, you have more details on this, but like there are a number of people at DIF that have gotten together, to create a vocabulary where, meaning like a way of digitally expressing this credential, where a subset of it is around a personhood credential. And last week we talked about like, hey, we need to get this thing, you know, in front of, you know, Stephen and Zoe, get their thoughts on it, and then try to put like an actual, like actually issue one of these credentials in like a playground setting and just get the technology kind of sorted out. I'm interested in hearing from others in the community where else, you know, work is happening. I know Drummond said that there's some stuff that's going on, in GAN, as well. So yeah, really interested in hearing about like other places people have seen personhood credentials start to pop up as like, you know, forming real things. That's it.
Andor, you're next in the queue.
Yeah, I think first of all, fantastic presentation. Thank you so much. Actually, Manu, your point's really well noted right here. I'm going to point in a link. I started after this paper indexing personage credentials and or just personhood sort of methodologies and types and just the nature of an index. So if anybody would like to contribute or help adding to the index, I think that'd be really appreciated. Feel free to, I just sent the link on the chat and would appreciate people pitching their projects. So thank you.
Great. And also there's a question in the chat. How can developers interested in building on PHT learn more? So I think some of you guys already kind of talked about it, but anything else to add?
This page from Andor seems like a great place to start.
that was what I was going to say. So great. Cool. Dimitri?
Yeah, I wanted to ask if OpenAI or the paper authors, had thought about a revocation and conflict resolution architecture. Because as we all know, verifiable credentials are great against being forged or stolen, but offer no protection against being voluntarily shared or, you know, shared for money, et cetera. And so I'm curious, if any thought went into the reporting, moderation and conflict resolution side of the credentials.
Yeah, I one thing I'll say, and others can feel free to jump in, is that one perspective that we came to in writing this paper was that in some ways, of course, theft and or sharing a credential, selling a credential is a huge issue. And especially in a world with multiple issuers, you know, people might have more incentives to share credentials or to sell them in some way. We sort of came to the view in this paper, and others can correct me if this is not a representation of your view, but I came to the view that to some degree it's like an okay cost to not have, to have these systems be occasionally sold or stolen or shared. And part of that is that one of the big, as I focused on in the problem statement, we're really talking about scalable AI deception. And to some degree, just being able to put a limit on things is incredibly valuable. So even if it's not really that, you know, this personhood credential is like exactly given to who it is exactly being used by the person who it was issued to, there's still this sense in which the overall activity and overall like fraudulent activity in the system is largely reduced. And that said, we also, in terms of the actual thinking in the paper, so that's one part of my answer is like, to some degree, you know, yes, you're right. And we kind of take the view that it's okay to some degree because there's still this overall limit. In the paper, we also talk a bit about, revocation and recovery and reauthentication, kind of taking the view that, you know, of course it's inconvenient to have to reauthenticate frequently, but we would tend to favor tighter expiration limits generally for this reason exactly. So while it's not like perfect and we can't transfer, like we can't prevent people from transferring or selling, you know, tight expiration limits would go a large part of the way.
If I could clarify, I specifically meant sharing with AIs, not with people. Does your answer still apply to that?
Yeah, and the answer still applies, and I think that, you know, again, one of the sort of positive use cases that we talk about in the paper is this idea of verified delegation. So yeah, sure, you know, give your credential to an AI agent, but, you know, again, you'll still be pretty limited in, you know, the number of AI agents that you could give your credential to.
May I add on that?
Please.
I think what Zoe said is totally correct. Like, we did not go so far as to lay out an architecture, I would say, for recovery or revocation, though certainly we recognize that they are like important and useful, but also maybe less critical than sometimes understood. And so in the case of AI, like Zoe is alluding to, you know, if a gating app has a rule that you may not delegate your account to an AI system, and you decide to do it anyway, right? You do it illicitly. You know, you're violating the terms of service. It's not great. If the site determines that you've done it, they can actually now they can suspend your account and you can't create another one. And so there is a pretty natural bound on what you can do. And likewise, you wouldn't be able to use your credential to power 20 accounts on the platform or do phishing at scale or things, to the extent that the platform decides that they want to limit to a certain number of accounts per credential. So hopefully that illustrates how you can still do illicit sharing in various ways, but at significantly lower impact than maybe in other systems.
Yeah, and I just thank you, Stephen. That's really helpful clarification. And I would just tack on that this is another kind of, it may be subtle, but it is another sort of difference from what we typically think of as like proof of personhood protocols, which really do care a lot about the credential only being used by the person it was issued to. Like we're a little, our view is a little looser than that.
Moni, do you want to add to that?
Sure. Yeah. I think, yes. So plus one to what, you know, Zoe and Stephen, have already said. I'm pointing out something that Greg Bernstein, who's been working on the BBS pseudonym stuff, pointed out in the chat channel. So, you know, this community knows that there's no such thing as a perfect security system. There will always be, security failures in any system that you build, right? So, we are expecting a certain amount of SIBLs in the system. It's just a natural consequence of, the balance that we're trying to, strike. I think, Dimitri, your point is like, how do you make it so the SIBLs don't make it so that the system itself falls apart? Like, there's a certain level of fraud in a system that leads to system failure.
Exactly.
And we don't want to go past that line. So, so there are a number of variables here, right? We don't want one Uber issuer that there's only one, you know, the United Nations of personhood credentials, and there's only one of those in the world, and everyone has to submit to that one organization to keep uniqueness. That's like a non-goal. It would solve the technical problem, but it would not be a good societal solution. So we're saying, you know, as Zoe said, we want multiple issuers. And we know that when we go to multiple issuers, there will be a certain amount of fraud in SIBLs in the system, but the theory is that we have to keep the fraud low enough so that the system is still better than not having, you know, the system at all. So one technical mechanism that could be used for this are BBS pseudonyms. So BBS pseudonyms allow the verifier to know whether or not the same individual is coming back and proving proof of personhood, but doing it in a way that's unlinkable. So it's using new unlinkable cryptography, to do that. That's one of the reasons I mentioned that this ITF CFRG work is like so important that it gets adopted, because if we don't get that adopted, then we don't have a way of solving this particular problem. And then, of course, as Zoe mentioned, like, if the worst happens, then people are going to be pushed towards a centralized system to try and, you know, mitigate the damage. So we have technical solutions, that can mitigate parts of these problems. But, you know, again, as Zoe said earlier in the presentation, like, these are like knobs and levers that are tunable, and you can't fully eliminate, you know, all of the fraud. And so the question is, you know, how do we prevent the bulk of it, which is, I think, Dimitri, exactly what you were getting at. So I think that there are technical solutions, but like, we are not done, right? We still need to work on getting those, moved forward. That's it.
Patrick, you're next in the queue.
Yeah, I think there's another aspect that I haven't heard mentioned, is that by limiting these amount of, you know, bots, if I can call it like, so you also give more power to existing feature to do their job. So an example is on social media, there's often some kind of moderation happening and accounts can be banned. It's just currently this can feel sort of useless because you sort of ban an account and then 10 new ones can be created really quickly. However, with this model, it sounds like you would ban an account and another one could potentially be created, but it would take a lot more time, a lot more effort. So it gives a bit more purpose to these existing sort of moderation or blacklisting anti-fraud feature by, you know, making it not so trivial to create new accounts, because currently, you know, it can be as simple as, you know, creating a new email, changing a digit in the email sequence, and so on. So I think that's a good advantage of this.
Thanks, Patrick.
Yeah, I think that's a great way of putting it. Like, my personal point of view is, you know, the internet seems to really struggle with rate limits. It's actually surprising to me how hard it seems to be to rate limit some of these fraudulent activities. And one of the fundamental affordances you get from a scarce credential, like a personhood credential, although it could be other scarce credentials, is you can now limit in a configurable way. And importantly, right, it doesn't have to be only one account per person. If X decided they wanted to let people have three unlinked verified accounts per person, but no more than three, we think that is a use case that our credential can also support.
Will, you're next.
Yes, thanks. I have something to say. First, I just want to challenge the assumption that it's limiting to a person, right? The real assumption is the system can limit to one of these credentials, right? These personhood credentials. That's not necessarily the same as a person, right? I could have three of my friends all representing myself in this account using that same credential, assuming that we're sharing the credential. But the system can guarantee that within their account, that's only going to show up as one entity. So, like, obviously, like, there's some risk for me to share that with my friends and then let them represent themselves as me, because I could get banned. Anyway, that's just, you know, I think, like, limiting to a person is not quite the same thing. But the main thing I wanted to say was, you know, this was all very, you know, it highlights the importance of pseudonyms, like Manu was saying, right, like the DBS pseudonyms. So my question is, what do we as the CCG need to do to, like, move forward this work? Like, I know that, like, cryptography has kind of been finalized in IETF, but I feel like there's a lot, like, some high-level protocols maybe that we should be thinking of and developing. Like, I mean, I guess this ties into Dan's work, like, around how does it fit into our credential, our verifiable credential data model system. I don't know, just some thoughts. I feel like this is really important. We should try and move it forwards.
Great. I think we're almost at time, but we'll go a little bit over. Drummond?
I just want to quickly say first, this is a fabulous paper. It has raised attention throughout the space. At IAW 2 weeks ago, we held a session on the Global Acceptance Network and personhood credentials. We think it's one of the most important credentials that needs to be widely adopted. So we're super interested in this topic and actively working on it. And I just wanted to thank all the authors of the paper and Zoe for the presentation today. We're following it very closely.
Thanks, Drummond. Manu?
Yeah, plus one to that. And also, to point out or to try to answer Will's question, which is what can we do here? You know, I think one of the things we excel at here is, setting up a pathway to do a global standard, right? So we already know that like Diff is incubating stuff, GAN's incubating stuff, a variety of other people in, you know, this various other communities are incubating stuff. CCG can continue to like work with all of those groups and ensure that when we feel like there is a technical solution and architecture, that is ready to start being standardized, that we create that pathway. We keep the pathway open that we've created from all these organizations through the World Wide Web Consortium through, to a global standard. So I think we just need to, you know, one, actively work on the problem. Many of us are, but two, or do the pre-work to ensure that the working group's ready to go when we feel like we've got a good handle on how to deploy the architecture and the technology. That's it.
Thank you, Manu. Yeah, I just want to add to that. I think CCG will continue to play the role to kind of connect different communities together, right? Whether it's DIF, IETF, or TOIP. I kind of want to get the Google guys to kind of talk about their initiatives on the digital credentials API. So just, want to connect all the communities so that we don't do duplicate work and we can continue to collaborate to realize the self-sovereign identity dream. All right, so we're 2 minutes over. Thank you, Zoe. Thank you, Stephen. Thanks a lot for a great presentation.
Thank you so much. It was really great to talk to all of you, and I hope that we're all in touch in the future.
Great. Well, this concludes this week's W3C CCG meeting. Thanks for attending.
Thank you.